This episode of This Week on Broadway is sponsored by SeatGeek. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, add a promo code, and enter the promo code BR20. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. Coming up on Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway, we talk with Patty Murren. Reviews include The Royale, Boy, Red Speedo, and Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, which is on HBO. Please stay tuned. Time has come to take it out of cruise control. Don't you see that there could be another way? Don't you see that this is so not okay? We could change the situation. We could shift the foundation. Oh, yeah. Into fire we are hurled. Why don't we change the world? Come on. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Don't you want a little taste of victory? Aren't you sick of all this mediocrity? Don't you want to stand tall, being all that you can be? Finally take control, control our destiny. Follow me and say goodbye to what has been. Follow me and we are so gonna win. Hello and welcome to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway for Sunday, March 13th, 2016. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this morning we have Michael Portantier and Matt Tamanini. Michael is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, the Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a theatrical photographer whose photos have appeared in the New York Times and other major publications. You can see his photography work at followspotphoto.com. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Hello. Also with us is Matt Tamanini. Matt is Broadway World's senior TV and film critic and the host of Some Like It Pop podcast, which is available on iTunes and Stitcher. You can connect with Matt on Twitter at BWWMatt. Hello, Matt.
Hello, James.
Peter is not with us this morning. He is off in Ohio teaching at CCM. Did I get that right?
Yep.
CCM. Yes, so he will be back next week. With us today on a Sunday morning, a daylight saving morning.
did we lose an hour last night?
Yes, we did.
That explains why I'm so tired and disoriented.
It wasn't last night's party?
Oh, maybe. Maybe it was last night's party.
Okay. Well, that voice you hear coming from Chicago over the phone is Patty Murren. Patty, made the New York Times this week, didn't you, Patty?
I sure did.
Broadway fans know Patty from Lysistrata Jones and Xanadu and tons of old stuff around the country and around the world. But Patty, tell us what happened this week in your life.
Oh my goodness. I feel like this week has been like 4 months worth of things that happened. Like, you start Tuesday, we're literally rehearsing for our new Broadway show, Nerd, and then they told us to stop. Uh-huh. We did. And we cried a lot, and we ate pizza, and drank a lot. It was 2 days later, I started to, I have a blog, and I write certain things. I'm not really great about writing consistently. Sometimes I write, you know, a few times in 1 week, and sometimes I write like once a month. But this was one, an idea that I'd had for a while about the Broadway World message board. But I didn't have an angle for it. And I know a lot of people have sort of assumed that I did it in anger about Nerds closing. But to be honest, it was I did it because I finally had a personal angle. People were, you know, talking about it and had been talking about Nerds for a while, before it even went up and what a disaster it was going to be. People who literally never seen a single second of the show. And I will say this, there's a huge faction, 99% of the people, who write on the message boards are amazing and wonderful and really want to go there to discuss and debate and learn. And disagree in an educated manner, but there is a small handful of posters who are not entirely respectful in the way they state their opinions and in the way they treat their other posters and the things that they say about us and performers. So I wrote a post. I wrote a blog post about it. And I hit send and I was like, okay, that's done up. I find that the things I'm most afraid to post either on Twitter or on my blog are the ones that are the most, the best received or, at least create the most conversation. And I didn't think it was going to create this much conversation though. So I wrote a post basically calling for Broadway World to move their message boards. Again, many people have been misquoting and saying that I called for them to take down the boards. Whether take down means literally take them down or like take them down, like I'm going to take you down,
It's very street of you.
Thank you very much. But my original intent and my whole, if you read the post, my whole reasoning was that Broadway World is such a huge, huge supporter and lover of theater. And so, I just always hated how they were the same things that were being written about and the same shows that they were promoting and supporting and heaping love on. People were actually just bullying in like a huge feature of their website. So that's what I wrote about.
Okay. So that's the basis of the post, and I'm glad that you explained that because I'm reading a lot of back and forth that, people are saying you're trying to take away our First Amendment rights, which, they really need to read the First Amendment.
Yeah, but that's not what the First Amendment stands for.
But other aspect of it is that you're not asking to do it. You're asking to, you're asking for Broadway World to, why diminish all the love that as you say, is heaped upon Broadway with some of these haters. And as Taylor Swift says, haters going to hate.
And it's like, I don't care if you don't like a performance. I don't care if you don't like the way I sing. I don't care if you don't think I'm attractive enough for a role. I don't care. I know criticism. I literally deal with rejection 10 times a day. Mm. So this isn't about me taking things personally. It's about when someone makes a comment calling us a performer in a really, really cruel manner, like, is he mentally retarded? Like, that is not okay. That's not okay. And I keep coming back to that one because that was one that
stuck out.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's like, don't, if you say like, oh, he's not going to be good in that role, say it whatever, however you want. But when you, that is bullying. That is bullying.
Patty, I have always felt that the anonymity is a huge issue. Years ago, I said that to someone who was involved in one of the sites, and I said, I have a real problem with it. And the person said, believe it or not, said, well, there was a tradition of, how did he put it? Back in the Middle Ages, people used to drop anonymous notes into boxes accusing people of things. And he seemed to think that was a good and then more recently it's come up with with the Crucible, but there was a lot of that during the McCarthy era. So I have always thought that if nothing changed except that the anonymity was not allowed, that would improve things greatly. And I know myself, I don't participate in Broadway World, but I participate in all that chat, and I use my real name. I use my real name, and every now and then I'll run into a particular colleague at the theater, and she says, I can't believe you use your own name. You're the only one. And I said, I'm not going to, partly because I write for them also, but I just don't think that. Now, having said that and not wanting to appear a hypocrite on other sites, I might say something about a politician, but I guess I think that, I don't know. I think that's a whole different universe, and so I don't Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I just wanted to.
Right.
Yeah, and that, and Patty, I've got, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask is that, you know, I think you and I have talked quite a bit since Thursday about this whole thing, and I think we're pretty much in agreement that we need to raise the level of discourse. But this isn't an issue just with theater message boards. This is an issue with the internet as a whole and the anonymity that just naturally comes. Because even if you, I mean, how do you verify that the name somebody uses is their actual
name?
I mean, so where is that line? Why is it? Is it just that you're a part of the theater community, that this is the issue that you're, or this is the one section that you're trying to take a look at? Or is there a way to make this something more universal where, you know, everyone can just be nice? Or is this just kind of a, you know, tilting at windmills a little bit because it is such a huge, massive issue?
Right. I think it's sort of a, like, I didn't go into this being like, I'm going to fix the internet. Like, because this is something that, that has been a problem. Like, with, it's sort of a, you know, with all of the incredible things that the internet has brought us, like, it's also, there's always a flip side. There's always a negative side, you know, and this is it. This is the, yes, like the internet bullying, you know what I mean, with the kids and the social media and how do you raise a child in the world? You know, it's a new world. It's. And so for me, it was more about like, it was more about sort of making our tiny corner of the world. And like, as big as it seems to us, it's such a small community and a small, like, everyone knows what Broadway is, you know, but like, nobody knows who I am, you know, like they, like, I mean, the fact that Audra McDonald was just on the cover of a magazine and like many people, I'm sure in parts of the country know her from Private Practice, you know, that TV show. It's like, yeah, they, she is like, she's like our idol. Like, I mean, she is like the the most amazing, you know, the, we're like, don't you know Audra? And like, people are like, like, you know, it's like when you find somebody who doesn't know who Brad Pitt is and you're like, where have you been all these years? So, you know, it is a small corner. And I think I felt like, and I still feel like, if you can make something a little bit better, why wouldn't you try? Why wouldn't you try? And
oh, no.
So I'm not about to start a crusade to like, let's go fix Facebook. Like, I don't even, you know, but this is our community. And as small or as large as it is, it's still ours, you know, and I say ours, I include the theater goers and the people who post online and the people, you know, every human who wants to be a part of Broadway in any way, see it, work on it, you know. And so I think that we can treat each other better than we have been.
The thing that's interesting to me is that the points that you raise in your blog post are not relatively new points, that we've heard them all over the years, but all of a sudden this has resounded so much this week in the Broadway community, where many Broadway fans are posting on Facebook and Twitter and privately in email in support of what you have said here. You've hit a chord that is resonant within the community, and as well as we should say that. I'm thinking that it was within 12 hours of your posting, Rob Diamond over at Broadway World responded to it and
it was within 30 minutes, I want to say. He was awesome.
So,
was great. Yep.
You know, it's interesting that you were the catalyst to this, and I think that you had mentioned before that you kind of posted it and let it go into the wind. You didn't expect this kind of...
Not this. I didn't expect the Times to pick it up. I just wasn't, you know, I knew it was going to make a bit of a wave, but I didn't realize that it was going to go quite as far as it has. I was hoping for, you know, I wanted change. I wanted everything, you know, that Rob has done already, and things, you know, we had lunch yesterday and we had a great time because we both want the same thing. We just want it to be a little bit better. And I know, you know, I know I said I called for like the moving of the board and stuff and people, you know, I think that's what a lot of them are really stuck on. But like my response has been like, well, okay, if I want $5,000, I'm going to ask for $10,000. Right. I'm not going to write a post about like, let's be nicer. Let's like, you know, it's like, not, you have to say something to start a conversation so that you can compromise with the other side and find something that you're both makes both parties, you know, meaning like, you know, people who stick with me and people who also post the message board, make everybody a little bit happier.
So well, I think you articulated it so well, and so thoroughly, that even if people might disagree with some points that you made, that's the reason why it's getting so much attention. And I keep coming back to the anonymity thing. I mean, people have always been able to write letters to newspapers, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems to me that letters to newspapers used to have the people's names on them, and I think they would.
And there's
right, you have to yeah,
would
you,
check them you, out, you know.
Yeah, and there's, they would actually call you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yep.
And there's
verify
so,
your identity. Yeah.
There's so many reasons why that makes things so much better. I mean, we don't know who you are if you're anonymous. You could be a spurned lover of someone. You could be
right.
You could be a producer of another show that wants to get into the theater.
And the crazy thing is that's actually what a lot of it is.
I think you're right.
Everyone has an agenda, you know? Yeah. And again, I'm going to say this again because I know that this is what people have been jumping on. I'm not talking about the 99% of the board community who truly want to connect and learn and, like, you know, disagree in a mature manner. I'm talking about the few people that I've heard from posters who either don't post anymore because they've been harassed, or don't post anymore because they don't think it's the same place that it used to be back when Rob started it. So that's not that. I know, you know, I've been called out a lot for not mentioning the amazing things people have said about, you know, the nerds closing. But like, if I'm writing an article about apples, don't get mad at me for not mentioning oranges, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm writing about the issue. Those people aren't the issue.
Well, you know, another show that has recently come in for a tremendous amount of nastiness, I've noticed, is A Disaster. So I don't know if those people, if they're just ordinary people who just can't stand it for some reason, or if they have if they have a tremendous hatred for, I don't know, someone in the cast. I just don't know what that's all about.
And that's honestly why it bothers me so much, is because, like, all of this talk, I mean, all of this started before when they announced Nerds, and it was like, oh, this is going to be a mess, this is going to be, you know, that was like the general sentiment. So, okay, so if people are coming on this board and you're defending people's right to come on the board and learn about theater, and you're actually turning them away from a show that you haven't seen a single second of, you don't know who's in the cast. We literally hadn't started rehearsals yet. Like, I hadn't even seen a new script. So when people are coming to the board and they're like, oh, what about this? Let me see what these people are saying. And they're saying, like, oh my God, this is going to be the worst. It's going to be, you know, you're actually driving traffic away from our show.
Patty, do you think, you know, if somebody in the 80s said a musical about cats, that'll never work. That's
there was
ridiculous.
A message boards then.
You know, if they were.
Well, I mean, even the revival now, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, Cats. Honestly, I'm really excited for Cats. Cats is my first Broadway musical. I really liked it.
Well,
I know.
It's a hot take right there, Patty.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, I'm excited about it. I hope I'm there on opening night. Like, you know, dance Cats with rats now, apparently. I think that's amazing.
You know, put Patty on the tire, go through the roof, have her float around in the Glinda bubble.
The heavy side layer. Oh, yeah. Man, that was just so lost on me when I was 6 years old. I was like, oh, he died. Okay, got it.
Oh, wait, what?
Spoiler.
Oh, you ruined it. You totally ruined it.
Am I not supposed to say that? Spoiler alert. Oh, God.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
no. I just ruined Cats for a whole new generation.
Oh, it's not new, but it's new to them. They've never seen it before.
You're right. You're totally right. Oh, man.
Now and forever.
Cool. Okay. So let's talk about Patty for a second. Tell us about Lysistrata and your experience. You've had some distance from it now, and reflect upon that magical time.
Oh, man. I couldn't talk about Liz Estrada for maybe a year after it closed. It was like, that was one of the biggest heartbreaks I've ever, ever experienced. And I've been divorced, so. it was like, we all went into it, and it was sort of like Nerds. Like, it was so unexpected. It was just like, we're going to do this show downtown, in the friggin' basement of a church on a basketball court. And I loved the role so much. And I was like, nobody else is playing that part. Like, we're making, you know, like, the Off-Broadway theater did not pay a lot of money. I got my real estate license so that I could make enough money to do that show. Mm-hmm. So when they were like, we're going to Broadway, we were like, oh, I'm sorry, what? Hmm? And so it was so exciting. We had like 4 months for it to really sort of sink in before we started rehearsals and stuff. And so it was like, oh man, it was huge to us. Because it was my second Broadway show. I'd done Xanadu. I started in that. That was my, I started The Swing. And, you know, when Anika Larsson left, they very nicely gave me her track. And I understood Carrie went on for her like 30 times. But I'd never, this is like, oh my God, like I'm the title character. Like, this is yeah. Amazing. And then we started rehearsal, and then we opened, and then we were selling tickets. And like between, I think we had 4 weeks of previews and 3 weeks of like the show. And it just became very clear that like, oh, all of this, like, you know, wonderfulness is evolving into like, oh, reality. We also opened mid-December, which is, I'm going to put it on record, not a great time to open a Broadway show. So.
Yeah.
not just, you know, in general. And so it was like, man, it was rough. But the time that we got to spend together doing our show was, I mean, like, that we're still a family. Like, we still have group texts and we still like support each other and everything. And we still are, you know, two of my best friends in the world are from that show, Kat Najat and Lindsay Chambers. And Kat and I used to hate each other. I tell everybody the story. We hated each other. Like, hated. Like, God, what year was I? Like, 26, 27? 27, yeah. I was in high school with her husband, Ben Thompson. Back then, he was her boyfriend. And we were just at very different places in our lives. You know, very distrustful of everything. We hated each other. And Liz Estrada Jones brought us together. And now I literally could not imagine what my life would be without Kat in it. And it's like the best. I think it's like one of my favorite stories from my life and my friendships. So it was amazing. Like that show and like Kat, like I had to, it was like doing Wicked where I had to treat myself like incredibly well, like no drinking, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, I like my wine. You know,
I was going to say, that's tough for you.
Cool, man. Oof. But you know what? Like when something like that came up, it wasn't that tough. Cause it was like, no, I have to like treat my body really well. I have to make sure that I can do the show because it's not an easy one, but like it was my part. We got an amazing review in the Times and it was awesome. But like, yeah, it was heart-wrenching. I couldn't even think about doing theater for a while. And so this last week with Nerds, watching some of, you know, I'm in a different place now, just with my life in general. And so, but watching some of, you know, the incredible performers who, a couple of them were going to be making their Broadway debuts and a couple of them were not going to be making their Broadway debuts, but going to be making like their, you know, like the show that put them on the map. This is their Liz Estrada, you know? And like, it's killed me to have to know exactly how they feel. Yeah.
On the more happy side, you have one half of a Broadway couple with your husband,
yeah.
Colin Donnell, who Broadway fans know from Jersey Boys, Anything Goes and Violet. And you're out in Chicago right now seeing him. You got your Nerds bad notice. You put up your blog post and you fled to Chicago to go support your husband. So tell us about Colin.
Yep. Colin is, oh gosh, he's doing so great. You know what I mean? He's like...
Well, why are you guys in Chicago? Tell us about why you're in Chicago.
We're in Chicago because he is on a TV show called Chicago Med on NBC. He's a hot doctor.
Are your parents proud you married a doctor?
Yes. They were like, that's fine. That's totally great. Totally great. If you're going to marry an actor, like, marry a successful one.
Yeah.
So he's on Chicago Med. He's, you know, we all know and love him from theater, but he's been, I think it was 3-4 years ago, he, while he was doing Anything Goes, he got a pilot for a CW show called Arrow, which is based on the Green Arrow comic books. And so he was on that for a year. Then they killed him off, which was fine because people are like, you know, all the fans are always asking, like, why did Tommy have to die? And I'm like, well, because he died, and then he came home and did Shakespeare in the Park, and we fell in love. So that's why he had to die.
That's my point. That's what I'm trying to get at. This story. Tell us about that story.
Oh, my gosh. I've known Colin. We have known each other for 9 years now. We met at a mutual friend's birthday party in 2007. And this mutual friend, I went to college with him, our friend Patrick Garrigan, and Colin knew him from doing shows. He actually was the officiant at our wedding. So it all really sort of brought very full circle. So we met and we lived like 6 blocks away from each other and we were just friends. I think I had a boyfriend at the time. We would like hang out, watch movies. He lent me the book of Friday Night Lights before it was a movie and before it was a TV show. He lent me the book. And so then we kind of like lost touch a little bit. He got my parents like house seats for Jersey Boys and then they wanted to see it. And I remember meeting my parents after the show. My mom was like, he's so cute. And I was like, oh, is he? No, I need to tell him. Yeah, I know. I didn't realize. And we always stayed in touch and stuff. You know, I saw him on and off over the years. They were always like, you know, friends. And then I got killed off the show right after, it was at kind of the exact same time that I was going through my divorce, where, you know, which was not the easiest thing, but everyone is very happy now. So it was actually totally, totally fine. And we found out we were doing Shakespeare in the Park together. We were doing Love, Flavors, Lost. Literally the audition process, I don't remember a single moment of because I was just still in that, like, just wrecked emotional space. So somehow I got that job. And we, you know, it was like, oh, great, I know Colin. And we actually, like, met up a couple times before. I mean, he had a girlfriend. And I was just like, I didn't see it. I didn't get it. I didn't understand. And, like, 2 nights before when we started rehearsal, I had a party in my apartment. And he came. And he was the last one to leave. And I ended up kissing him in the hallway. And then I was like, oh, he's really cute. Which to me now is like, I just couldn't see it until, you know, and we were starting rehearsals like 2 days later. And so I was like, oh God, I just made out with this guy. Now I have to see him. What the heck did I do? And we both, you know, we described the beginning part of it a little bit differently. We both came into it with a lot of our own baggage and things to get through. And so it was not the typical, like, love at first sight thing that all of my other relationships have been, and which is also amazing, but it was really like two people who'd known each other from the very beginning trying to kind of get back to who they were before at the same time. And because we knew where we came from, it was very easy for us to hold each other accountable for that, which I think was a big part of the success of our relationship. And we just, it probably took 6 months, but we fell in love. And, you know, he's maybe one of the most incredible humans on this planet.
Well, I think that you guys need to do the revival of Beauty and the Beast then.
Oh, my God. I would die.
Why that show?
that seems like a random reference, James.
No, because they didn't love each other at first. They didn't, type of thing. When you have to explain the joke, it's not funny.
or it wasn't funny in the first place. All right, Patty, we've talked about some serious things, but the most important thing that I have to ask you is tomorrow night is the finale of The Bachelor.
I'm so excited.
Where do you sit on who he should pick?
I think he should pick Lauren B. I love that we still call her Lauren B, even though there's only one Lauren left, because we started with three more. Three. More, it's like everyone born within like a 5-year time range was named Lauren. I think I really would like him to pick Lauren B. It's been a really crazy season because, like, you know, there's unwritten rules that are like, no, you can't tell girls, you can't tell them that you love them, like, because if you do, you're either going to ruin the ending for everyone or like like he just did, he didn't just tell one person he loved. He told both of them, like, within 2 days. And he's like, I have two true loves. And I was like, Ben, that's not what true love means. True love means a singular.
Well, I have to... I have to ask you, you know, what is your relationship to The Bachelor? Because I don't know this.
Oh, James, you're opening up a can of worms here.
I mean, I could talk about this for like another hour.
Well, the thing is out of left field. I mean, we're a Broadway show, show here, and Matt brings up The Bachelor, and I'm like, was Patty on The Bachelor? What was the...
No. Unfortunately, I wasn't. that's actually kind of another funny story because they're literally probably 3 weeks after Colin and I started dating, where we still weren't like, you know, like telling anyone we were dating. We weren't really dating. We were just like
showmans
hanging out
at that
sushi.
Point.
Yeah, totally. Yes. There was actually, we live on the Upper West Side and we were both in different apartments at that point, but there was an open call to apply to the, you know, one of the next women on the next Bachelor. And my mom called me and she was like, you should do it. And I literally was like, it was in like 2 hours and I was like right by the ABC building, which is on like 66th and Columbus. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, man, I kind of want to do that. But I was like, kind of this guy that I'm kind of dating. I guess I don't know, maybe like next time. So I chose Colin over The Bachelor. And he knows how much that means. I've always loved it. I've always been a little obsessed with it because it's like there are very few reality shows from that whole reality show boom that happened that are still around. Like Survivor, Amazing Race, and The Bachelor, I think are the original ones. They've taken, it's a competition show like Survivor and The Amazing Race, but it's about finding a husband or a wife, which, like, when you think about it, you're like, this is ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
But it's like ABC, it's like they've been on for so long, they just celebrated their 20th season of The Bachelor. So, and they've had, like, three different spinoff shows from it. So they get it, and they get how to do it. So they're in on all of this. But the kind of amazing thing is that by the end of the season, you're like, I mean, like, you saw how passionately you were like, who's he going to pick? And I was like, Warren B. Like, I care. Like, I truly care about who he's going to choose. this is also, it's been an interesting thought this week because people are like, well, you're snarky about The Bachelor online. Like, how is that different? And you know what? I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to reconcile that with myself. I'm trying to figure out. I am.
It's like we're all human. But you're not doing something anonymous. You're not you're not anonymous. And Michael, the matchmaker is just the Bachelor is just an updated version of the matchmaker from Fiddler, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, I think you're right. Chris Harrison is
Yenta.
Yenta.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you tell that I was raised Catholic?
if you haven't seen Patty's live tweets of The Bachelor or read any of her recaps, they are comic gold. But now you're right, though. We're gonna have to look at them through a different lens.
Yeah, but you know what? You're right, though. I'm not doing it anonymously. Can you tell that I'm still working out a lot of this stuff for myself? Like I'm still.
Patty. Honestly, you know it. I try not to make this show about James Marino, but I started Broadway Stars in 1997. And when I started Broadway Stars, the first thing everybody says was put a message board up. And here we are nearly 20 years later, and I have never put a message board up because I couldn't deal with those issues. And before Rob started Broadway World, Rob came to meet a partner as be a partner on Broadway Stars. And he told me he wanted to start a message board on Broadway Stars. And I was like, that was kind of a deal breaker for me. And there's a lot of message boards out there that are much, much worse than Broadway World. YouTube comments, Google is one of the richest companies in the world and they know this is an issue and they can't figure it out. There's tons of bullying on Twitter. and Twitter is trying to deal with it. And these are large companies with hundreds and thousands of employees that have the cash to do this, and they can't do this. But I admire what Rob is doing over Broadway World to at least try to delve into this and start getting it done.
He's been incredible. Yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, like, you know, the automatic, the button that they've, you know, been working on, and he just thought the timing was, you know, probably important. They rolled out the report abuse thing on every message. Also, they just updated their guidelines, and it was something we had talked about yesterday about, like, okay, well, what are the consequences? What are the definite consequences? Because, you know, it was all sort of like a little like subjective, or like this comments is enough to get you suspended for 3 days, but like this, you get a warning. And so they just implemented like a, you know, three warnings and you're suspended. And then after a certain amount of suspensions, you're done. And so it's like, it's way more cut and dry. Which I think, like, I don't think that they'll ever take away the anonymity. Oh my God, anonymity is awesome. that's their prerogative. That is, you know, I still think that, you know, if you have opinions, why can't you say what you feel out loud
with your name attached? Yes.
I think that speaks volumes about all of the people that are still, I mean, there was a whole thread about me on Broadway World. And I, you know, after this happened, and I read every single post, and I'm still reading every single post. But it's not because I'm like, it's not because I want to, you know, I'm trying to, like, you know, I like to call it emotional cutting. my friend Andrew Reynolds made that up. Like, you know,
I
just
cut
when
so
you look
I can
at, like,
feel.
The crappy things people are saying, you're like, oh, God. But, like, I want to know what they're thinking, because I want to work together. They do not like me over there at the moment. I will say that. But there have been interesting points raised on there that I have been like, oh, okay, I didn't see it from that way before. I'm in this also to learn, and one that's posted directly on my Facebook, directly on my Twitter, directly on my blog, I have been really trying to make sure that I read what they're saying to me instead of reading what I want to hear. And it's been really amazing. And honestly, I'm going to say 99% of the conversations I've had, we've both come out of it being like, this is a really great interaction. Thanks. Wow. Okay, cool. But like, you know, the one person who made the mentally retarded comment, he did comment on my blog. And I commented back, and I said, you still haven't told me who you are. So like, And then he never wrote back again, but then proceeded to go back to the message boards and talk all kinds of crap about me again. So it's like, but this isn't a larger, you're not making it a larger conversation. You're looking at it as like, this is a thing I like doing. She's trying to take it away. And it isn't that at all. There are other people, parties involved that don't feel that the message boards are a safe place to be. And I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want people coming to read the board and writing something. Like, I was reading through some other threads yesterday just to be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to read all these other ones. I want to see, like, what's going on. And people were having a lovely discussion about Karen Olivo in West Side Story and how she was the first Anita on stage to win a Tony. But Rita Moreno won the Oscar, and someone like stated this fact and, you know, was like, well, this is Oscar Tony. And to myself, I was like, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. And one of the posters that I called out in my blog, like quoted their thing and was like, yeah, we know that. Where do you think you are? And it's like, that obviously you can't do anything about that because it's not, but it's like, okay, so now that original poster isn't going to want to write back and he's not going to want to associate anymore. And you know what? I didn't know that fact. I don't know everything about Broadway. I don't know near everything about Broadway. So like maybe these people do, but like they have to, it's like they, I think there's a certain amount of, power and ownership that they feel over it, which
that's
fine. They've been there for a long time. They've been posting for a long time. So I get that, but it doesn't give them the right to be nasty.
It does.
You know what? First
it.
Amendment, you know, yeah.
Michael, what are you saying?
That's what I was going to say before. It's just it's this power that people have now that they didn't have in the old days.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you could write a letter to the newspaper and then wait
a week or 2 weeks for it to be published, and then it would have, and then it would have your name on it, you know. But now, everyone wants to be, you know. It's, I guess it's human nature. Yeah. Everyone thinks they're an expert, and they want to say what they feel, and now they can do it anonymously. But I do think I do think you're right that it will, they will probably never change the anonymity thing. But I do think that if they did change that, we would see a tremendous difference, because there are just things that people will say when they think there's no accountability that they will not say if they're, if they just have their names on it.
So I, in my original post, I had called for, you know, all the people that I had called out, specifically to like come to me, like, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, like come send me a message, whatever, you know, privately, publicly, I don't care. I just want to know who you are and your side of the story. And one of the posters was a woman who I know, and I didn't realize it when I was writing it. And I adore her. She's a, one of the biggest theater fans I know. And she herself posted my blog and said on Facebook, and she said, this is me. You know, I was called out in this. It was never my intention, but like I've learned a lesson from it. And I love her even more now. Like she has been like owning up to what she accidentally did. And it was, you can look this up any, you know, online, but it was the post about me not being able to hit the high C in Wicked.
I can't do it either.
I learned how to sing soprano for that role. so, but you know, to me, it's like, but, and she is like, she's amazing. And that's exactly like, she is like a shining example of like, oh wow, she said this thing that, and she unknowingly spread information that she thought was true and it wasn't. And she realized as soon as it was written, like, oh, okay, it was wrong. And she's amazing. I am in such awe of her because I don't know that I would have even been able to do it that publicly. You know, I would have apologized, you know, but like to like really like call attention to the whole issue in a bigger way, while pointing at yourself and saying I was a part of this. Like, it's incredible. Those are the kind of humans that like I really wish that like the entire world was made up of.
Well, Patty, I want to thank you for getting up daylight saving early and Chicago early for New York recording time, and everything else, and sharing your stories and your opinions on what's happening here, because I think it struck a big chord in the Broadway community this week. And it's very timely, and I'm glad that you were able to have a platform to talk about it again.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been, like I said, you know, you don't know what it's like why we have previews for Broadway shows, because you've got to figure out what's going to, you know, what's going to be, how it's going to be received for a while before. And so, you know, like I'm the first one to say that my first post was not perfect. You know, there are things that I've actually gone back and updated it. Like I haven't. Mm-hmm. It says update on the bottom, you know, a couple different wording things. It's been a really incredible couple of days. So thank you for the opportunity to like, you know, kind of expand upon it and the things I've learned in the last short 48 hours.
So we're going to edit this all up to make you look stupid. Okay.
Great. Perfect. So, it's just going to be like, just like words, like mentally retarded and then like clips. Yeah.
And Patty Murren supports Trump. There it is.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. I'm in Chicago. I can start my own rally.
Thank you so much, Patty. It's great speaking with you.
You guys are all awesome.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you soon. Thanks, Patty.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This week's episode is sponsored by SeatGeek. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated and try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell tickets for theater, sports, and music. SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available on all the sites in one place so you can save time and you never miss a deal. Best of all, SeatGeek is honest and upfront about the price. Unlike other ticket sites, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price from start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Broadway Radio listeners can get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Enter our code, which is BR20. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. If you are a fan of Broadway Radio, I hope that you will support SeatGeek. Download the app and give it a try.
In our review section, Michael and I got a chance to see The Royale, which is playing at the Mitzi Newhouse at Lincoln Center Theater. So, Michael, tell us what you thought about The Royale.
The Royale. I liked it very much. This is a new play by Marco Ramirez, set in, as it's stated here, the start of the 20th century. And it's based loosely inspired by the life of Jack Johnson, the famed African-American boxer who sought to bring heavyweight champion James J. Jeffries out of retirement. So that is the inspiration. The names are different, but that's the general story. And I liked it very much. It's so interesting because just last week, as I think I reported on the podcast, I had seen a play called Walk Hard that dates from the 40s, written by someone named Abram Hill, which also deals with almost exactly the same thing, that the efforts of young black men to try to get into the boxing world at a time when, I mean, it's hard for us now nowadays to remember, or I mean, if we were alive, or if we weren't alive, to picture the fact that there was a time when boxing, along with so many other things, was not open to African Americans. But it was, and it's true, and that is what The Royale is about, and Walk Hard is about. Also, the time frame is a little different. As I said, The Royale is supposed to be the very early 20th century, whereas the time setting for Walk Hard was 1937, I believe. I'm sorry, 39, because I remember they had some Gone with the Wind reference in it. But anyway, yeah, I thought this was a very good play at the Newhouse, the Mitzi Newhouse, and I thought it was staged very well in that space. It had some very good performances. Chris Davis, John Lavelle, Clark Peters, McKinley Belcher III, and Montego Glover. My only thing is, this was just so noticeable to me. They did a thing at the end where it's all building up to the bout between the main character, played by Chris Davis, the central character, and this veteran white boxer, who, it's one of those things where if he gets this bout, it'll really make his name, and so he agrees to do it, even though the deal with is that the white boxer is going to get 90% of the take, win or lose. So that's how much this character Jay wants to box this guy, just to help make a name for himself. And so it's all building up to that. I knew from having read the playbill that it seemed like no one was going to be actually appearing as the white boxer, and indeed no one did. But the strange thing is that the white boxer, that scene was pretty much depicted, and the white boxer was played by Montego Glover, doubling, you know, from her role as the girlfriend. And I thought, you know, guys, I mean, is this really just a cost cutting measure? I mean, I realize it costs a lot to get a whole new actor, but that doesn't usually seem to be an issue at Lincoln Center, honestly. So maybe Marco Ramirez wrote it that way specifically with an eye towards future productions, but I thought it really damaged the play, and I thought it would have been so effective if this guy came on who we had never seen before and actually was playing the white boxer. I think that would have been really, really effective to have him come on at the end and then have us see the fight. The other interesting point is that none of the fights, we see one in the beginning and then we see one at the end, and none of them are depicted realistically, and I think we can understand why that is. I thought that was handled very creatively. They would indicate the actual blows by lifting up these very heavy posts and slamming them on the floor, and that actually I thought that worked really well. So I don't have a problem with that, but I do wish that there was someone actually playing this guy who we've heard about all evening, this legendary white boxer who is going to be facing our hero in the ring.
Well, I loved this show, and I'm hoping that it's going to have some sort of afterlife after this limited run is played out. I thought it was great. It was really amazingly directed by, is it Rachel or Rachel Shafkin?
Rachel, I think.
Rachel Shafkin?
Yeah.
And the story, as Michael pointed out, by Marco Ramirez is amazing. The everybody in the cast is really wonderful. And the concepts, like Michael was talking about the body blows and the fights and how they were done, I kept on thinking to myself, you know, could they have used something similar to that in the Broadway production of Rocky? But then I was thinking Rocky was so literal and this was so conceptual.
Right, right.
And they used this tiny space so well and transformed it from a hotel room to a boxing ring to a locker room to all these different things. I thought, you know, it was just a canvas that they kept on painting amazing photographs, amazing images on. So,
I should say that thing, having her play the role was certainly all of a piece with the rest of the production, in the sense that you were saying it, that it was very much not literal. But did you not have a problem with that at all?
No, I didn't. And as you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, I got to get a hold of the script. And I wanted to see what they wrote in there, because I didn't think the lines that she was saying in the final scene where the fight was were from the other boxer's point of view. I thought that those lines were from her point of view.
Oh, yes. No, you're right. I mean, yes, and that does. But so it's very interesting.
I felt like she was not boxing him and standing in for the white boxer. I felt that she was there as his conscience, talking about what was going on in his head, a discussion between him and her in his head as he was fighting that fight, and what the impact of winning or losing would have on their community.
I think you're absolutely right, and thank you for clarifying. But my only thing is, they had previously had quite a lengthy scene together, so I felt like a lot of that had been covered. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that from a dramatic standpoint, to actually see this person who we had, I mean, they mentioned him so many times, the white boxer, throughout the show. I just felt that it really built to it, and that's also can be a very dramatic thing that has not been used in many shows that I could think of offhand, where a character who is discussed, you know, all night, then actually appears at the very end. That can be very, very effective, and you know, I do realize that. Economics is an issue, I don't think it's an issue at Lincoln Center, but I'm sure the playwright was thinking in terms of a future life, as you mentioned. So that's my only thing, but I still enjoyed it very much, and I think it's very creative, and I'm glad to to be exposed to the work of this playwright that I wasn't familiar with previously.
All right, next up, Peter talked last week about Boy, and Michael went to go see it. So, Michael, what did you think about Boy?
It was very, very good. I'm glad to see that this is a new play by Anna Ziegler that's being done by the Keene Company, and as a co-production with Ensemble Studio Theater, by the way. And also, the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation gets a large credit here. So I guess it's the three of them putting on this play, and it really is a
fascinating play based on a true story, which is probably not the only time this has happened, but there was a particular story of an infant boy who had a horrible accident occurred during a circumcision, and his penis was basically destroyed. And then the parents have to decide whether to raise him as a boy or a girl. And at the urging of a doctor, they decide to raise him as a girl, and that goes okay for a while, but then it starts to not go okay, especially as the child starts to reach adolescence. And so it's whether this character, who is now calling himself Adam in his adult incarnation, whether he's going to be a boy or a girl, a male or a female. And Bobby Steggert, one of our best actors, plays Adam. And he did just as good a job as I thought he would. The other characters are the doctor is Paul Niebank. The parents are Heidi Armbruster and Ted Koch or Koch. How does he? If you have an umlaut over an O, I guess that's Koch.
I'm totally lost there.
you're the resident linguist here.
Linguist,
Michael.
Yeah.
I thought I was, but I'm stumped on this one, and I never even realized he had that umlaut until now. And here I was complaining 2 weeks ago about Timothy Chalamet and his accent aigu. So I'm just gonna give it up anyway. And then Rebecca Rittenhouse is the fifth character, and she plays a young woman who becomes involved with Adam after he has decided that he's not going to be a girl anymore. A very, very timely issue, even if the specific circumstances are not that common. And I really do applaud, again, Keen for doing this. Jonathan Silverstein, the artistic director, made a speech at the start of the show, and he said he mentioned that they had not done a new play for quite some years. I forget the date of the last one, but they frequently do revivals and revisals. So I think it's great to have this in the mix, and it's certainly a worthy piece. And I know that Peter liked it very much too. So I think it's very worth seeing. It would only be worth seeing if only for Bobby Steggert, but there is much more to it than that.
All right. And you also got a chance to see Red Speedo, which I understand is about a red bathing suit, right?
I said it should win the Ralph Nader Award for
truth in advertising.
In advertising, yes, exactly. You get exactly what you think you're going to get. The main character, Ray, played by Alex Bro, is in a Red Speedo throughout the show, and there is an actual pool on the stage at the New York Theater Workshop. It's not very wide at all, but it goes the length of the stage from stage right to stage left, and that's a pretty wide stage down there. So I'm thinking that they could, who knows, they could do maybe they should leave it up and do the frogs, Sondheim's the frogs,
or metamorphosis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Metamorphosis.
Yeah. Wish You Were Here, that musical from the 50s.
Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard, yeah.
Alex, I'll take Broadway shows with a pool for $300.
Form of a question.
Well, this play is a lot, I would say, a lot heavier than most of those. But it's about this character, Ray, and he is very much in the style of Ryan Lochte or Michael Phelps, and may I say, I've seen Alex Bro on stage before. I think he did a body transformation to this to a certain extent. I mean, he was always very well built, but he looks exactly like a swimmer. Like a champion swimmer. So, no fears that you're not going to get that when you go see this play. But I will say I I thought it was quite unsatisfying in terms of the writing by Lucas Nath. The main point of the show is that initially one of the other people on Ray's team is performance enhancing drugs are found in the other person's locker, and that's the catalyst that starts the play. And then later on, it doesn't take too long before suspicion falls on Ray himself that maybe perhaps he is juicing. And that's basically what it's about, is he or isn't he. But it just seemed to me that there wasn't a lot of complexity to the play. One interesting thing is that the Ray character is presented as quite dim. I'm almost want to say stupid, and certainly not very articulate. And that was interesting in a way, but it also limited the complexity of the issues that were dealt with. The other characters are his coach, played by Peter J. Fernandez, and his brother, who is also, I guess, his manager and maybe his lawyer, Lucas Caleb Rooney, and then a woman named Lydia, played by Zoe Winters. And it just kind of seemed to me that it was the same issue over and over again, and nothing there was nothing very terribly surprising in it. And until the finale, which is a huge conflict between Ray and his brother, and I didn't really think that played out very convincingly either. So very short. I think it was less than 90 minutes, if I recall correctly. So it wasn't boring, but it just didn't really go to the places that I thought it might have gone to. Just for the scenic design by Ricardo Hernandez, and I guess the costume design by Montana Blanco, it should be seen. They really do amazing work at New York Theatre Workshop, and one of the things they do is that it does seem like every time you go in, what you're going to see on stage is going to be completely different in terms of production values and design, and because they really do a tremendous variety of work in terms of styles and everything else. So that's only a good thing, and I applaud them for that.
All right. So that is Red Speedo at New York Theater Workshop. Let's move forward into our television and film section, where Matt Tamanini is going to tell us about Lady Day at Emerson Ooh. Bar and Grill, which was on HBO this weekend and is available only through April 9th. So if you want to check it out soon. Matt, give us your review on Lady Day.
Wow, this is there are often times that I regret the fact that I do not live in the New York City area, but watching Lady Day last night on HBO was one of those where it really hit home. I didn't see the stage production, which I'm assuming both of you did, but to see Audra take on this role was fantastic on screen. I think I remember a lot of the reviews saying that the show itself is, you know, not the most eloquently written piece, but I found that to be true, but it really didn't matter. Audra so completely transformed what we know of her into Billie Holiday that you really were transported to 1959 in Philadelphia. You really, if you didn't focus too much on the fact that Sarah from Ragtime, or that's even as Patty mentioned earlier, that's what's her face from Private Practice. If you just let yourself get involved in the show, you really could have convinced yourself that was a filmed Billie Holiday performance. It was magnificent, and to see how completely devastating that show became in that second half. The first half was charming, and it was nice, and there was a lot of information given, about Billie Holiday's life. But from that middle point on, where she goes and grabs her dog and comes back and really has a breakdown, a descent into kind of a drug-filled, you know, collapse, it was I mean, it took my breath away. I thought she was fantastic, and I can only imagine what it would have been like to have been in the theater to see that live, because seeing it on screen was mesmerizing.
Now, that's so interesting. I did see it live, have not seen the TV version.
Sure.
You've done the opposite. I think that probably one should really see both, because as it was absolutely great live, but I could see how this would be a perfect property to transfer to television because it's so intimate, and it must be really great on the other hand to get in with close-ups on Audra. So I can't wait to see it.
Well, and they did, and there were some, especially at the end, as you notice that as the, I don't know if it's a show or a film or a broadcast, because there was actually a live audience in modern dress, so it wasn't like they were actors playing the audience. This was filmed in New Orleans at a club in New Orleans, so it was really intimate. But as the show progressed, it did get a lot of close-ups, and there at the end where she is having her breakdown, you see all the sweat and the tears, and this might be a little indelicate, but almost snot coming out of her nose because she is so out of control of her body and what she's saying, that was striking. It shows you that Audra McDonald, as if just in case anyone wasn't sure, is a lot more than just a pretty voice. I mean, there's a reason she has 6 Tony Awards, and it's because she is one of the great actresses, not only of our time, but of all time, as far as I'm concerned. And this is one of those things that if you needed documented proof, if you needed something to show her brilliance, you can turn to this, and whether you DVR'd it or maybe they'll put it out on DVD, this is one of those time capsule moments where you're like, yep, this is what the late 20th, early 20th century was in terms of great acting on stage.
Well, and I think if anyone had given that performance, it would be magnificent. But the fact that we all knew what she,
right,
what her voice is normally like and capable of, I thought it was astounding. I will admit it again. When I first heard it, I thought, what? I thought that voice as Billie Holiday, but she, I mean, clearly, anyone who's seen it, it really is to the point. I think I have quite a strong familiarity with Billie Holiday from listening to many recordings over many years, and I don't think I could tell the difference. Except if you recorded Audra doing it and you made the sound quality sound like it was from the 50s, I don't think I'd be able to tell the difference.
Well, and that's what's so sorry. I mean, I remember I saw Ragtime on my very first trip to New York City in 1998. And so I've always had a strong affection, not only for that show, but for Audra, because she was such a big part of my first trip to the city. And to see this, where that soprano, that big soaring soprano, is nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. But it still feels so natural. And she's able to do what I think was great about it. There's a difference between doing an impression, I think, and then being able to recreate the sound, but still being able to tell a story while doing it. It's not – I don't feel like she's doing an impression of Billie Holiday. And you know the similarities between what she's doing and Billie's actual voice far better than I do. But she's so able to live in that voice and to communicate the emotion through that voice while still having the kind of those signature flourishes and idiosyncrasies that it's more than just recreating the sound. It's really making that sound her own.
I think I said this before. I wonder how this happened, and this is what I envision. because I know that Audra has worked with Lonnie Price before. Is he credited with the TV direction?
Yes, he is the director of the TV version. And there is no, you know, with a lot of these live things that we've seen, there's a, you know, performance director and a TV director. He is credited as the only director.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that. And of course, he directed when she did it at Circle in the Square. But I envision that, because they do know each other, and I envision they were at a party some night, and Audra started singing like Billie Holiday, and Lonnie Price said, "Oh my God." And maybe Audra did, or maybe she didn't know about the existence of this show, which was a previously existing show.
Right.
And maybe Lonnie said, "Hey, you know, there's this show about Billie Holiday, and maybe we should do it."
Well, it's worked out. However, if that's the way it happened, it worked out really well. And obviously, not only for all the people that saw her in New York, people that saw her on HBO, but if you're listening to this in London, she's going to be there this summer doing this show for 3 months. Get your tickets, because this is something that if I had a chance to see it live, I would – there's not a whole lot of prices that I wouldn't find a way to pay to see it.
So if Broadway Radio sent you to London to cover it, you'd go?
I would – I think I could carve out some time in my schedule to do that, yes.
Excellent. Well, you know, as long as The Bachelorette is complete.
I'll leave that to Patty. She's much better at that than I am.
All right. So check it out. I'm going to have links to Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill on HBO on our show page. And there's a bunch of featurettes and clips that you can watch to get a feel for it, as well as the entire schedule. What were you saying, Matt?
I was going to say, and also they do, HBO does have their, if you don't subscribe, they have their standalone app. It's, I can never remember if it's HBO Go or
Now.
HBO Now. There's one for if you're a subscriber, one if you're not. If you are specifically wanting to see Lady Day, you can sign up and you get your first month free, and then just make sure you cancel before that month is over. They have not been shy about making that very clear, not only with this, but with other things. If there's a special event that you want to see, you can do that. That's why they give you the first month free. They're, of course, banking on the fact that you'll forget to cancel before that month is over. But that's
I have a gym membership like that.
Exactly.
I have four gym memberships like that.
They just keep recurring every month. Yeah. But this is that's a great way to do it. If this is something you want to see, you can use whichever.
HBO Now. Yeah, HBO Now is the standalone streaming service that gives you all of HBO, no TV package required.
There you go. So definitely sign up, because it's worth it. And like I said, it would be interesting to see, and I know a lot of other people have done this role off-Broadway and regionally, but I'd be interested to see someone else do it, because the show itself wasn't all that captivating, but the performance was just so impactful in my mind. So it's definitely worth signing up for HBO Now or whatever it is to see it.
Can you not also just watch that particular show on demand?
If you're a subscriber to HBO, you can watch it. HBO Go, you can watch it on demand.
Oh, okay, but not as a non-subscriber.
HBO Now is the on-demand option for non-subscribers.
Got it. Okay.
So, Matt, with as you being our resident specialist in theater and film with the connection back to Broadway, have you heard any rumblings of future adaptations by HBO? Is this HBO's foray into the NBC Fox live theater thing?
Well, this wasn't live. This was filmed. But they do have this. They have All the Way coming up in May. And they are – they originally had planned on doing Masterclass with Meryl Streep as
Maria Callas,
and Mike Nichols was going to direct, and then obviously he passed away, and that's kind of been put on the shelf. So they are, you know, they're constantly kind of diving into the theatrical stuff to find properties to pick out. But I think how well this has been received in the theatrical community, at least, because HBO is they don't care about ratings. Their Nielsen ratings mean almost nothing, because they're a subscriber-based platform. They really care about the prestige, the awards that come with it, and getting people to sign up, to pay extra to have HBO. So I think with how well this was received by the theatrical community, that will only encourage them to do more things like this, because that is a trend, like you said, with network TV going to theatrical-based programming. And I think something like Lady Day or like Masterclass or like All the Way, that is a more adult, more serious property, plays very well with what HBO already does. And I would love it, because it opens up the amount of different shows that could be seen on television. Obviously, the ones that are going to be on Fox or NBC or ABC are going to be more family friendly, and they should be, because they're on broadcast networks. But when you open it up to a paid cable, a premium cable network, the sky's the limit in terms of what they can do. So I hope you're right. I think that would be great to see what they do next, to see if they do an actual musical at some point, to see HBO's talent and sensibilities behind it. That'd be pretty cool.
Be nice to see if Netflix takes the bait and raises the bar, and Netflix does one.
Yeah. You know? That's a good option.
And
too.
Amazon Prime or Amazon Amazon Studio, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it is. All right, so that wraps it up for today. I want to remind listeners that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe link. That way, each and every time we do an AOA episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to you. Also, you might have been hearing in the feed that we've doing this Today on Broadway podcast, short podcast of the daily news. And that is also in the feed. We're going to be splitting the feeds into a This Week on Broadway feed and a Today on Broadway feed and the news shows that we haven't told you about. So you'll be able to either get all of them in one feed, or if you don't want to listen to one or the other, or you want to separate them out for some other reason, you can do that as well. But we'll put those feeds up in the next week. You can also listen to us in many other ways. One of the ways is the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, Android device, and stream us directly to you. Listen to us also on Broadway World Radio. Broadway World plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m., and don't read the comments. So, contact information for Michael, for Peter, for Matt, and for me can be found at BroadwayRadio.com, as well as links to some of the things we talked about today, including that Lady Day link and all those videos and the information on how to see that. Links to Patty's original post and the New York Times article on Patty this week that came out regarding those posts. So Michael's going to fill us in with an answer for one of the trivia questions. So, Michael, tell us about that.
Yes, what happened is because one of our podcasts was delayed due to technical issues, we wound up recording the answer before the question was actually aired. So that got a little screwed up. But the question was that there are at least two musicals in which songs were cut before the show opened. And then the music alone of those two songs wound up being used at the start of the musicals without the lyrics, just the music alone. And the two that I was thinking of were Follies. There was a song called All Things Bright and Beautiful that was cut, and it is the first music we hear in Follies, in the overture or the prelude. And then another one was a song from Chicago that was called Loop in the Loop. But then was put at the start of the show, music only, and that's the melody that goes ba da ba 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 da ba da ba da ba ba. So that's that. Now, since then, I have gotten two responses of two people. Michael Shane got both of those, and he also mentioned another one that's really a great one that I hadn't thought of. There's a song called "Misery's Coming Around" that was in Showboat, and it's one of the great pieces from it, and it was really cut from apparently it was done at the very first performance of Showboat in Washington D.C. I believe, before it got to Broadway, and then it was cut because it was just felt it was too dark. But it's an amazing piece. And then another part of it goes. So that's amazing. And then Jake Leonard came up with All Things Bright and Beautiful from Follies. He did not come up with Loop in the Loop from Chicago, but he came up with another one. There's a song that was originally a song in the Jerry Herman show review Parade that was cut but was used the music only at the beginning of the show, and then that subsequently became the music for the song I Want to Make the World Laugh in Mac and Mabel. So there you go. There are probably other examples, but I'm grateful to Michael and to Jake for coming up with two that I hadn't thought of.
So due to these technical issues and my mind is blown about we ran the answer before the question. I didn't realize that.
No, we recorded the answer before. Yeah, that's what I mean. It gets a little complicated. So Jake and Michael had not heard the answer when they sent me the emails.
Oh, I
even
see
though,
what
even
you're saying.
Even though we'd recorded it, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So Joshua Israel tweeted at us and asked about our trivia answers, but I'm not sure. Is this the answer that Josh was looking for, or was there a different one?
I think that was a different one.
I think Peter might have a question still outstanding, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yes, and so we're going to leave that question outstanding and leave that as that for Peter to come back next week and answer. And so I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of This Week on Broadway. Check us out at BroadwayRadio.com and also check out and give us feedback on Today on Broadway. So on behalf of Michael Portantier and Matt Tamanini, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. See you this week. Bye-bye.
Bye. He don't want me telling nobody. You see, all I ever wanted was a beautiful home and some kids. I love kids. And I never had any. Not one. Like the wind that shakes the bar, he moves me with a smile. The difficult I'll do right now. The impossible it take a little while. I say I'll care forever, and I mean forever. If I have to hold up the sky, crazy he calls me.